Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. And
I'm actually back this week.
Yeah, you are. That is a bit strange. And Jake is actually back this week.
Yes, I just
actually.
Thought actually. And not figuratively, although that as well.
I guess. You could be metaphorically back.
My back is back, metaphorically.
Right. That's sort of true. Anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach, purely not by coincidence, has a dual identity. Maybe more than that. I don't know.
Could be more than two.
Right. Well, at least two. So, our secret identity, which isn't really all that secret.
We're not very good at keeping secrets.
No, we're not. Well, actually, we are.
In certain areas,
yeah,
yes. But we have a...
Right.
When it comes to our secret identity, we're not very good at that one.
No. There's a building in Salado, Texas, and there's a sign out front that's in stone, and it says Personal Wealth Coach.
We've got to have to yank that off if we're going to keep
it
secret.
We are going to yank that off and move it around and change it to confuse the Russians or the Soviets or something.
They cannot know.
The communists.
Right.
And inside the building is an organization that is also doing business as the Personal Wealth Coach, although technically it is the Wealth Coach LLC, but it does business as the Personal Wealth Coach. And it's registered with the SEC as the Personal Wealth Coach as a fee-only investment advisor. And it also is the name of this radio program. And we've been working on the fact that those two are the same for how many years now? I don't know, a lot of years.
A lot.
We've been trying to understand this.
I've been doing the show with you since 19...
Show? You said...
I did.
He said show.
You hear that?
Please mark down in your notebooks, ladies and gentlemen, that he called it a show.
The peer pressure is getting to me.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad you're finally... A lot of peer on you.
Yes. The... 1998, which if you do the math on that, it winds up being a long time.
Uh-huh.
That's the result of...
Is that when we started this?
You started in 97. You were on the air for 6 months on your own with a half-hour show it was a half-hour program and then an hour program, and when you hit 2 hours, you said you needed help.
Oh, I don't have to hit 2 hours to know I need help, but that's beside the point.
I've needed help for many years, professional help, and it hasn't really been available.
Well, we are professionals, and we do help, which brings me to the point that we have telephone lines in here, and we have numbers that you can call on your telephone. And one of them, if you're local or on a cell phone or something, is 254-773-1400. And obviously, if you're one of those 60% of Americans who still have a landline telephone and use it in your home, 773-1400 in Eastvale County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else. I find it kind of humorous that we're still at, I mean... You made a big deal about talking about the landline, but the 866 number doesn't really matter as far as cell phones go.
Right. You can call the 866-597-1400. Actually, it's not toll-free. It's just the toll is paid on this end.
Right. Well, on a cell phone, you're still paying for the minutes that you use.
Well, not necessarily. If you have unlimited minutes,
That's true.
You know, and I think I have unlimited minutes or something like that. Anyway... and if you'd like to give us a call and ask us anything that has something to do with the economy or investments or portfolio management, because that's what we do, then you're certainly welcome to give us a call. Again, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Well, the only reason I emphasize the 773-1400 with the 254 in front of it is we have two of those lines. We only have one 866-597-1400 line. So, like, if one gets...
I think it'll roll around.
Actually, it doesn't. It's just
no.
It's just the two 773-1400 lines.
It's like this was built in the 1960s or something.
You think it was
crazy.
Built that late? Because I know the control board here, when I first used one that was virtually identical to it on KBEL in Oddbale, Oklahoma, was in the mid-1960s, and it was not a new board.
Right.
It was an old board in the mid-1960s.
Well, we have made progress. There are no ashtrays sitting out for our use.
Well, there weren't any there either.
Ah, well. See, they made
progress. Of course, it was progress. They had high school students manning the station, so even back then, high school students weren't supposed to smoke. So.
I see that radio has gone downhill. They can't find the high school students, so they had to drop down to lower competency level. And
like
they have us.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Any rate, so what happened during the week?
Oh, boy. Well, the week began on Sunday, and it made it all the way to today.
There's some dispute on that.
Yeah, alternating days every 24 hours or so. So that happened. We have a Congress that's dysfunctional, but that's not new news.
Yes.
We have a market that is volatile. No, that's not new news.
No.
Man, trying to think of something new about... Oh, I had tuna noodle casserole last night.
Is that about it?
There was some other stuff. I mean, we got good financial stories to talk about, but I mean, when you think about it, in 30 years, when we talk about this, are we going to remember this, or are we going to remember the casserole?
No. What happened? No, you're not going to remember the casserole.
Probably not.
What happened during the week, and for those of you who are interested in such things, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed out the week at 15,000. Well, it jumped on me there.
258.24.
It's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I read your mind. But I read the website.
And the S&P 500 closed out the week at 1691.75.
To most people, those numbers mean absolutely nothing.
And for the week, the Dow was down 1.25%, and for the week, the S&P 500 was down 1.06%. Now, what does that mean?
Just compared to last week when it did really well.
Relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking, yes.
And it's important for those of you who track such things. Well, I think it's important because in talking to people, they seem to be shocked. The Dow is actually a little bit below where it was in May. And a lot of people have come into the office. I say a lot. A number of people have come into the office. We do reviews and so on. And they say, why is my portfolio down recently when the market is up? And that's because, as I have to explain to them, the market isn't up recently. It hit a peak in May. It is bobbed around, gone up and down. And if you don't catch all the news every day, you might think it's up, or if you caught the news on other days, you might think the market is way down, because,
right.
Yes, it is both.
There is something very clear as to why the market is down, though. Very
I know.
Clear.
Well,
when we look at the market, we look at very long-term trends, and we're looking at things saying, you know, what's the health of the overall economy? We're talking about, are we in a credit bubble, or is there a housing bubble, or... are we talking about bond interest rates? You know, we're talking about the Federal Reserve actions.
Well, considering...
None of those reasons are the reason to weigh it down.
But in perspective, back last November, the Dow was at about 12,575, thereabouts.
Uh-huh.
And it's over 15,000 today. So down is relative. Yes, it's lower than it was in May.
Right.
But it's higher than it was last November or October, for that matter. And
what that says, it says something about the confidence of the American people that even though we have a really incompetent Congress right now, it can't be that incompetent. That's the
I think
confidence.
They may be mistaken, but that's beside the point. Let me tell you what actually is going on, and for that matter, record high for now. It's got a long ways to go to get back to where it was in
5,000 plus.
But here's the point. The market is actually reflecting reality pretty well right now. The market is down from where it was in May when some noise started coming out of Washington that was sort of negative. It's up from where it was last year because the economy is much more healthy now than it was a year ago or 2 years ago, and certainly a lot more healthy than it was back in 2011. It is down short-term. Remember, the House of Representatives, who are on the Republican side of the aisle, might actually blow the whole thing up. And a bit of a metaphor. I'm sure unless you have not been listening to broadcast media or reading the paper or anything, you're probably fully aware of the fact that in just a couple of days, the United States government will run out of money, run out of authority to spend money.
Well, yeah. Well, on October 1st, they need to have either a continuing resolution, which seems to be a good Band-Aid up till now, or a budget, which is
right.
What I would prefer.
Budget? You must be kidding me.
Talking about a budget is one for the silly people who...
It's a French word, budget.
Budget, yes. Yeah. You can't have a budget. This is America.
Anyway, what's happening is that, I think there's a pretty fair chance at this point we won't have a continuing resolution. We won't have a budget. We won't have anything to keep the country going and spending money as of October 1st. I don't know that that's true, but I sincerely hope the Republicans in the House have got a strategy. My understanding was they were meeting last night, most of the night, trying to work one out. I think they may be related to me somehow, but anything worth doing is worth putting off to the last possible
right.
moment.
Here's what we're going to do. I recognize that strategy means long-term plans, but what we're going to do is we're going to make a strategy for tomorrow
and since
tonight.
Well, the whole point is, of course, the Senate is now adjourned.
Right.
And will not reconvene until 10 hours before the end of the fiscal year.
Unless Harry Reid changes something drastically.
But he'd have to call them back, and I'm not even sure he could get them all back. So we're probably going, and listening to the commentary out of Washington, I think no one is too horrified at the idea that the government shuts down, because we've done this before.
Right. Well, not only have we done it before, we've done it many times before.
Right. But
and this is something, because it made such major news when Newt Gingrich did it and Bill Clinton started talking about it, there's been this massive backlash, political backlash, against the idea of shutting down the government. But it happened every year that Jimmy Carter was president. Every single year the budget came due, the government shut down, and by government shut down it means the museums and national parks
right.
had
thing,
to close their
the,
doors.
The non-vital functions of the government stop
the
functioning.
Post office keeps now, working, all that good stuff.
But the big one.
The big one isn't that.
The big one's still coming a little bit further down the road.
On the,
theoretically, on the 17th of October. At least that's what the Secretary of the Treasury is
yes,
saying.
Yes, that's their estimate. And they were pretty good with the estimates, back in May. They said sometime in mid-October.
Yeah, well, on the 17th of October is the big one. If the House of Representatives does not raise the debt ceiling, first off, we're going to presume that they're going to pass some kind of a bill telling the government to spend money.
Right. Right. At October 1st, they pass, say we're going to, I'm going to give a rosy scenario, they pass a budget that has not happened for...
Or a continuing resolution.
That hasn't happened. Okay, the continuing resolution has been happening every
which
year.
Which they say basically says spend a whole bunch of money over the next several months.
Right. Which is kind of like a budget, only not as nice.
Which is an economic term, by the way, whole bunch, which means more money than any of us can imagine.
Yeah, that's a lot of zeros. I don't know how to think that
big.
Well,
it's about, it's twice a half bunch.
Yes, more than that, yes.
Yes, and so what... This is a really interesting scenario, and this is why we say it's dysfunctional. If the House of Representatives, and I'm going to use the term because I keep hearing it in the political
Senate is involved now, too. It's
caves,
not just the House.
Caves and says we are not going to defund Obamacare, even though we said we were, and they fund Obamacare.
Uh-huh.
Then 17 days later, after they have said, Secretary of the Treasury, spend a bunch of money.
Then they'll say...
They have the opportunity to say, I know by law you have to spend the money.
We just passed the law that said you had to spend the money.
But we're going to forbid you...
Can't
to
do it.
Borrow the money that we told you you had to borrow.
Because we have another law, you see, that says you're only allowed to borrow this much money, but the other law besides that law that says now you have to spend money that you don't have, but you can't borrow to do it.
This is, and this is just Jeff McClure's opinion.
Yeah, I think it's shared by Jake McClure.
This is, and Carl Rove.
And a lot of other people.
And a lot of Republican leaders around the country who are serious about being leaders. This is painting oneself into a corner where every possible scenario is written in capital letters, L-O-S-E, you lose. Frankly, I don't get it, but this is where I sincerely hope and pray.
I've got a good strategy for that Republicans.
That the Republicans in the House, the conservative Republicans in the House, have some wonderful secret plan that we haven't thought of, and they're going to pull it out of the hat at the last minute.
They don't.
And say, I don't know. I mean, I am totally clueless to how they're either going to cave and be buffoons.
They are doing their
buffoons.
Jobs, and I know what we're saying, that the Congress is being dysfunctional. I'm gonna come at this. I've been thinking about this for the last several weeks.
Right.
They're doing their jobs. Each congressional representative is doing what they got elected to do.
Right. Shut the government down.
Our congressman got elected by saying, we're spending too much money. I am going to make the government spend less money.
But when he passes a continuing resolution, which he's almost certainly going to do at some point, that says spend a whole bunch of money,
right?
That's kind of not
yes. And this is where
consistent with
this
that.
Is where it comes right back to something a little bit strange.
Well, maybe they can vote for it and then vote against it.
I'm going to make this a bigger picture all of a sudden.
Okay. I want to see the bigger picture.
Wait a minute,
you're going to make a bigger picture on the radio?
We're going to paint a picture with words.
You're going to have to make big words.
I had a picture of lemonade.
Onomatopoeia.
A picture is worth 1,000 words. So I had a picture of lemonade, and I would have called it 500 words. But, you know, it was probably half a picture. Who knows?
Okay.
Anyway.
You're going to have 1,000 words to make a picture.
We have had a shift in the way information spreads. It's happened all over the world, and it's led to instability all over the world. We've had the Arab Spring. We've had civil wars in Africa. We've had unrest in the former Soviet Union. We've had massive shifts in how we share information, on how information is gathered and how we get news. Tends to be without a focal point, and I'm going to get, it's a little strange, stay with me. When I was young, you remember
when
this.
When you were young.
You remember this.
You still are young.
Yes. MTV was music television. I wasn't allowed to watch it for a pretty good chunk of my childhood, but when I was allowed to watch it, they played music on television. It's pretty amazing. The name of the channel and what they showed was the same. They don't do that anymore. I was at a wedding last week in Massachusetts, which is why I wasn't on the air with you. And they were complaining about how the dances aren't really the same anymore, because in the 80s and the 90s, you had things like Thriller, and you had these things, everybody knew the moves to these dances. Everybody could do them, or at least attempt to do them. They knew what they were talking about, when even people that had no idea about dancing, they didn't like to dance. They knew what Thriller was. They knew how to do some form of that dance. And I realize some people, this is after your time. That was a shift in information, and it had a focal point where a whole went to one place to get information, in this case, information on dancing. That was a symptom of an era. We had one or two or at most four places that we would go for news. We had one or two or three people that we would go for political strategy. It is no longer the case. The thing that is the same about the Occupy Wall Street movement, the Tea Party movement, and the Arab Spring is that all of these movements were much more flash mob and no voice. And we're seeing that in Congress. The people that were elected to the Tea Party have no specific leadership. All of the rules that have governed congressional infighting in the past got thrown out the window. We have a Speaker of the House, which during Newt Gingrich's time, that was a title with power. Even during Pelosi's time, that was a title with power. When a large portion of the people that were elected to sit in Congress were elected by people that said, we don't like the leadership. They're doing their job. But what that means is they're doing it dysfunctionally, just like the government in Egypt or anywhere else, without a focal point, without a focus to bring that together and actually do the thing that they were elected to do. They have to take one message, and it's a divided message that's happening now. So that all I can say, I've got a great strategy for you. You need to have a focused message. And they all go, yes, we know that, but who's going to do it?
And that really is it in a nutshell. There's a couple of really strong issues that are kind of hiding beneath the surface here. One, for those who don't really geekily track small stories like we do, wages are up so far this year.
Wait a minute. Wages are up? Yeah. How can that be?
In real terms,
it's true.
The average American is now making a bit more, 0.5% more.
I can see that in my paycheck.
In the last month. And that doesn't sound like very much, but it really boils down to not quite half, it's 0.48%, I think. But the point is that what we're seeing is a trend towards increasing wages for Americans that look like we may actually get, on average, now any individual may or may not see any of this, about a 5% increase in net income to Americans this year. That's the direction we're going.
That's a very healthy growth.
That's after inflation. Inflation, on the other hand, is running along about 1.75%.
Well, yeah, on a long-term trend, we've had some spikes in the downward direction recently.
And the point is that the Fed's target is 2. So we have low inflation. Wages are beginning to rise. There's a lot of cash still on hand.
Earnings are up almost across the board in the major corporations. So, government spending is going down. The budget is being looked at in a way that hasn't been looked at in a long time.
And we're getting this underneath the loud noises coming out of Washington is a great deal of health. Now, what is going to happen in Washington? I don't know. But
there's going to be a lot of boat rocking.
It is not going to be large enough to wreck the ship. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you had an opinion on where you think the Russell 2000 would be at the end of the year 2018.
I ain't got a clue. Don't follow the Russell 2000, so
I think it's still going to be based in the Russell,
Russell
offices.
Yeah, Russell will still be making it up, but other than that, I don't know. Russell 2000, frankly, is a bit of an arbitrary index.
All indexes are arbitrary.
We stopped using it some time ago because the Russell Company, it's called, which was started by Frank Russell, has this habit of changing the makeup retroactively.
Yeah,
like they go back and say, "Oh, those really weren't." Then, by the way, there's a whole lot of Russell indexes. I presume you're talking about the Russell Small Cap Index.
That's the 2000.
There's like 20 Russell indices now.
Yeah, they do retroactively change them. So even if you keep records of that index and you compare your records against their records, they're going to be different.
So we follow the really, really, really major indices because, like the Dow and the S&P 500, we sort of follow them and talk about them because they're on the news. But that's the only reason we follow them because we don't...
They are the news.
Well, maybe they are the news, but they're reported.
Yeah, so see...
And they belong to Rupert Murdoch, so they're probably cool.
You have raised a point that I really actually wanted to get to, caller. This is something that at the beginning of our episodes, we talk about where the Dow is, where the S&P is. These are indexes, and most people hear those names all the time, but they don't know what it means. And then you called in and asked about the Russell 2000, and he says that's kind of an arbitrary index. I made a joke. All indexes are arbitrary.
They are.
They are. They are absolutely arbitrary.
Well,
and when
all.
I say they're
not
covered
all.
In the news, they are the news. If you look at the companies that produce the indexes, these are news organizations. So it's kind of like a measuring device that is created so that it can be reported about. It is a measuring device like a meteorologist can use a rain gauge, but that is actually measuring rain. When a news organization can say this is the rain gauge, but sometimes we put water in it from the water hose, that's what the Russell's company does. Or sometimes they drink out of the rain gauge. So it's really hard. All indexes are arbitrary, just some are more arbitrary than others. Does that help?
Well, in a way. Like when you watch CNBC or the Fox 2000 and they give you a number.
Right.
Is there any way to invest in that particular index?
Yes, absolutely. There are ETFs that specifically, matter of fact, Russell licenses, that's where they make a lot of money, licenses the use of the Russell 2000, and I don't know what ETF it is. Would I recommend it? No, unless you just like to speculate.
Here is the why, and this is another good thing. People that have listened for a long time have heard this, but we haven't said it in a very long time. When we had low ratings at the very beginning of our broadcast history.
We ever had anything else?
Actually, our numbers are really good. I don't know why that is. I don't listen to us.
I think it's arbitrary.
I used to make the phone lines light up, I would say index investing is communist. And we have a very conservative listening audience. And the phone lines would all light up at once. Because index investing, it doesn't matter the management of the company or the management of the fund, for that matter, in picking stocks.
Correct.
You just have to be a certain size. And in the case of the Dow Jones indexes, you've got to be considered a certain feel. But it isn't about your management. It's about your size. It's about do you represent the country or whatever. And in the case of any index, if you put a bunch of companies in there based on size, rather than having a minor amount of input from somebody with a brain saying, this company is actually making a profit versus this company will never make a profit. Index investing doesn't give any merit to hard work. It only gives merit to size. And if you think about Marx, you can see my comparison to communism there. A little active investing, and you can look at...
He's talking about Karl Marx, not German currency.
Nor am I talking about the brothers, though I like them quite a lot.
Well, there's an ETF.
Over a period of time, though, hasn't the Russell 2000 done better than the S&P 500?
It all depends on when you're talking about. Right now... small stocks over a long period of time. Now, there's something called a Fama French study.
Yeah.
They do better.
Small stocks do better than large stocks. However,
eventually they become large stocks
is the point.
Well, that's why you
But they're much more volatile, which means that there are much longer and deeper declines in the values of small stocks than they are in large stocks. However, small stocks, I mean, it's perfectly rational. You think about a small company has a lot more room to grow than a big company. And so they do over very long periods of time. Small stocks do better than large stocks, and value stocks do better than growth stocks. So if you really want to have the best performing asset class, according to Fama French, available in the United States, you go with small cap value stocks.
Or mid cap value stocks.
Well, mid cap value are smoother. Whether or not the Fama French study does not address mid cap, but the Fama French study addresses small, large value growth, and small value over a long period of time has done much, much, much better than large cap growth stocks. Even though large cap growth stocks have certain periods of time, we're in one right now, when they take off and go like a rocket ship.
I mean, it is a lot like comparing apples and oranges. If you say one index has done better than the other, they're measuring different things. It's like saying the rain gauge in a tropic zone sure did a lot better than the rain gauge in the desert.
Absolutely.
It did. They're different things, though. They're not the same thing.
But the main thing is you want to make money.
Not, well, yeah, but you also don't want to lose it.
Yeah, that's
true, but if you you're a long-term investor, why wouldn't you go with small cap
well,
value?
Well, let me explain why.
Or a small cap index.
There are good reasons.
Let me explain why. Why are you investing the money?
Make money.
Wrong.
You're investing the money so that eventually you'll have money when you need it and want it to spend it, right?
There's only one.
If you've already got the money that you need and you've got some extra money that you want to invest to make money, why wouldn't you go small cap?
There's only one thing you do with money. In the end, there's only one reason to have money. What is that reason?
To spend it.
I mean, you can have it just to have it. Then you're a collector and it makes you a little bit strange.
Why is that?
Because that's the concept of Scrooge, collect it. If you're trying to make money on your money so that you can spend that money. Do you remember the stories from the Great Depression of the people that put the money in there?
Yes, I was alive during the Great Depression.
Right. The stories about the people that starved to death with a mattress full of money.
Well, I don't remember that.
Yeah, there are.
There are many stories at the time it was a pack rat type syndrome. That's collecting. Eventually.
Well, you're always going to have that.
Right. But you know you're going to spend money to eat.
If you like to see a lot of up and down, with the hope that eventually you'll look at the total rate of return over the next 20 years and say, I got a better rate of return than somebody else did. Yeah, a small cap index is probably a pretty good way to go. That's because a small cap index over a 20-year period probably will outperform a large cap index. But if at some point an emergency arises or something comes up, and this is where the average investor is.
Yes, this is why we don't give specific advice. We give
where they need that money. And usually, if it's an emergencies by definition are unexpected. And they have, and believe me, I've seen this happen so many times where people have come in and say, call in and say, I need to have $30,000 now. Well, what do you do if you're in a small cap index and it's down 80% at that point? For example, the reason I say that is because when the Dow Jones Industrial Average drops or the S&P 500 drops 50% like it did in 2008 and 2009, the Russell Index dropped about 85% in that same time period. And it takes a long time for it to catch up. You know, the NASDAQ obviously has a lot of small stocks in it, and that's probably one that's very easy to see. And the NASDAQ has still not recovered it's about 60% of the value it had in the year 2000. That's a long time to wait on a profit. But the NASDAQ historically has dramatically outperformed the S&P 500. It's just you got to wait 20 years in some cases to see it.
So I have to be very clear here. We are not saying we don't want you to use smaller cap stocks. In fact, that's the opposite of what we're saying. But to put all your money into one position without regard to that position, that to us is scary. And we actually have another call coming in at this point. We have commercials to play.
Thank you very much for calling.
Did we cover that well?
Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
We disagree, but we covered it well, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And we have a caller on 866-597-1400. Go ahead. You're on the pair with the Personal Wealth Coach.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Chris Johnson calling from Arbitron Radio Rating.
Really?
We're on the air.
Go ahead, Chris.
Can you tell us our ratings?
Oh, no. I'm calling to see if you guys would want to be a part of the radio rating survey. And did I reach your residence?
No, this is a radio
You're on the air
program.
On a radio program, so how appropriate can it be? You have
Did you plan this?
You're on the air live.
You called an 866 number.
Oh, okay. I was trying to reach a residence. Your phone number is not 254-791-1995?
Maybe that's one of the numbers that comes in here.
Place, I don't know. But
it's not a residence, though.
I don't have this on this. Okay.
It's very appropriate that Arbitron would be calling.
Yeah, I think we would love to be part of the Arbitron project.
And you're on the air with
And I'll guarantee that the people at this telephone number will be listening to the radio 24 hours a day.
Maybe that's why our ratings are so good, because they call this number to see what they're listening to.
Well, cool. I do apologize. that you guys aren't going to be able to participate. I was trying to reach a resident, and thank you.
All right, thanks for the call.
Well, some people
Bye-bye.
Live here, I think. Okay, anyway.
Maybe somebody lives here.
We got a break for commercials. That was interesting. Now we know. Okay, and this is the Personal Wealth Coach. We'll be back on the other side with more of our silliness. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And before we go any further, I want to issue a little disclaimer here that those commercials have absolutely nothing to do with us. We don't endorse them, and we don't have anything to do with them. And I only can say that if anything in there has anything to do with investing, it's buyer beware, buyer beware, buyer beware.
Yes.
And there's some very dangerous things in there where people routinely lose money, except for the people who put on the programs. Anyway, you wanted to talk about the FHA.
Yes. The FHA, the Federal Housing Authority, they're the people that they issue mortgages to people that live in the United States that are American citizens and sometimes not, but they're backed up by the full faith and credit of the United States. They also issue something called a reverse mortgage. And several weeks ago, we had a pretty prolonged question on that. We've had lots of questions on it. We talked about the dangers of them, about basically, well, in essence, what you're doing is you're trading your house for an annuity. You get the money while you're living in the house, and then later on, if it works out for you, then you've had the money and the bank takes the house or the insurance company takes the house. And a lot of times it's a mortgage insurance company mix that does this. And the danger involved is very clear. And we talked about this several weeks ago about how sometimes you get this ongoing payment for the rest of your life, and then the company can't make the payment anymore. Just like the other way around with the mortgage company, if you have a mortgage and you can't make the payment anymore. It doesn't happen very often, but it's a very real danger, and it's something that may happen more often in the future. The Federal Housing Authority has been issuing these reverse mortgages, and it's generally for senior citizens that are not making enough money and they don't really care if their house goes to their heirs. So there are some very few situations where it's a good deal. Most of them are not good deals, but very few situations. And generally, the ones that the Federal Housing Authority issue are pretty good deals for the senior citizens. Long term, the Federal Housing Administration is looking at losing about $5 billion on its reverse mortgages.
Losing?
Losing, as in not being able to recover the costs. Because the annuities that they're issuing on these people are for their lives, and they're living longer than expected. They are asking the federal government right now, the Treasury, to cover $1.7 billion in losses for this quarter.
So getting an FHA reverse mortgage sounds like, on average, a winner.
Right. Well, that's because they have the full faith and credit of the United States government backing
right.
up. If you're talking about another reverse mortgage company, you just have to bet on the fact that they're going to be able to sustain the kind of losses that took General Motors down, the people living longer than they expected to. That's the issue. And I thought that was a good story and worth bringing up. You hadn't heard about it, so
yeah,
I figured most people out there wouldn't know about it either.
One of the things, when it comes to reverse mortgage, what I've told people is a very consistent thing. Get an attorney before you do it, because in essence, you're selling your house.
Yeah.
And selling a house without professional assistance, with only the salesperson, only the buyer saying, we'll be glad to do this,
yeah,
this,
sure,
this sign right
deal.
here.
This is a good deal. I do this all the time. Yeah.
And people really don't. People are terrified of attorneys because they, oh, my God, they're going to charge me. I mean, get a qualified, legal, written opinion before you do a reverse mortgage. And I realize the mere fact that you're trying to get a reverse mortgage means you're probably a little short on money. But I think it is one of those things that's really, really, really well worth the time and effort, and it is just very, very important that you get professional assistants who shoot it. I'll be very frank with you. I realize that I don't think I've had anybody come in recently and ask me. But one of the things, like Jake just said, something very, very important here. Let's just say you're going to live another 30 years. You are betting. You're betting everything on the fact that the company that is going to pay you money for the next 30 years will be in business for the next 30 years.
Right. When a bank does that with you, when they give you a mortgage, they do a massive credit check. And at this point, they're not giving mortgages out to people except that just a very few.
The other thing is that if the if you fail to pay the mortgage, they can come get your house.
Right.
And if the company goes bankrupt that technically now owns your house,
living in it.
You don't have the resources. They suddenly stop paying you. You're broke. You don't have the resources at that point to recover your house from that company. It's going to be really bad. So you need to really, really, really approach. They can be a very good thing, but they need to be approached very carefully. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Irv up in Temple.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
Live and kicking, I think.
Okay. I've got a question. I know I'm not the only one who gets them, but I get these inquiries in the mail. People want me to invest in oil futures, and they've got land they're going to explore.
Wildcatting.
Looking for investors.
Well, you know.
Wildcatters.
Yeah, okay. If they contacted you on an unsolicited basis for a – if they contacted you on a non-solicited basis,
you know, almost bet one thing.
Because people with a lot of money and who are reasonably sophisticated wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it is one of those things where when a sophisticated investment, and believe me,
that is
wildcat, all this stuff that you're talking about is sophisticated stuff. And they contact people who are not sophisticated investors. And a sophisticated investor has actually a definition under the SEC. You got $1 million invested someplace or more. If they're contacting you, then one of two things is true. Either the chances of this succeeding are so slim that a real investor wouldn't touch it, or it's a scam.
Yeah.
Nothing in between.
No.
Well. I'm sure, guys, that I ain't the only, you know, that's mass mailing, you know.
Right.
They're looking for that 1% or 0.5% to respond to it to get their money.
Yeah, and that number is actually going down. Now, we have to say this. There are times that people win the lottery in this, but there are so many more times that they spend tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars and get nothing
back.
Well,
what happened is, the SEC and the courts have now concluded that private placement investments can be advertised to the public.
Yes, it's a new thing.
Previously, they could not advertise, and advertising includes sending them through the mail.
You'll even hear it on the radio now.
By definition, those investments are extremely risky, and that's not even a good enough definition. If you're going to be successful in that type of investment, first off, you do phenomenal homework. You spend tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars on research on the investments. And secondly,
there's
you
a geologist involved,
right,
at the very minimum.
But you make the assumption that the majority of the specific projects you invest in, the vast majority, are going to fail.
That's why they call it wildcatting.
This is even at the most sophisticated, successful level. And the bottom line to it is there's a very small percentage that are going to succeed if you invest in a lot of them. That small percentage should make up the difference. But here's the point. The ones that are probably going to succeed, the chances of they don't have to advertise.
No.
Right.
They're flooded with money.
In fact, there are services that they go to, and they say, this is the geological report I need cash to get this started. They go to that service. The service taps the people that already have money waiting for this kind of report, and that money flows immediately. It's the people that they go, well, I don't really have a geological report. There's possibly some oil in the area, and we need some money. And they go, all right, well, we'll send out some letters.
And it's also critical, if you decide to make an investment like that, that you have the resources to audit and track what they're doing with your money.
Yeah.
Because it is not publicly audited. It's a secret. Yeah. It's a literally a black hole, okay?
Hopefully it has a lot of black stuff in it, but you know.
You don't know.
Yeah, but I get, you know, even you get the phone calls, you know, wanting to invest in this and that, and I just tell them I'm so poor, you spell it with seven O's.
There you got it. Nice. I love it. Thank you. Okay, we got a break. Right, yeah. Thank you. And we got a break for Fox News. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting. We do portfolio management for people with relatively large sums of money. If you would like to contact us off the air locally, it is...
Locally, it is 947-1111.
Or you can reach us toll-free, again, voicemail at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You may email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com, as in thepersonalwealthcoach.com. And you will be able to see our podcasts.